This is Phil Lamar, and you are listening to the Untitled Mike and Laura Project.
Phil, this is Laura and her other half, Mike.
Oh, she gets stopped billing now.
Ah. Yeah, straight.
Because I don't want to be confused between two Mikes. That's why I went with her first. Smart. They are the ones that are going to be conducting the slash interview slash conversation with you. I'm just producing it on my end. And I mainly wanted to get this for them because I had heard you on Rob's podcast, and you kept gushing about Walking Dead, and they are huge Walking Dead fans.
Yes. Well, who's not?
Yeah, at this point, really.
Yeah. I mean, with the show and now the video game, which has gotten really good reviews, and all the books.
When's that coming out?
The game? It actually just hit, it's on PlayStation, and I believe it's on PC and Xbox as well. It came out last week, the first episode. Yeah, it's episodic.
It's Telltale that did it, right?
Yeah, so the people who made the Back to the Future and Jurassic Park games that just came out recently. So every month or so, there's going to be a new episode to the game. So,
how much does it cost?
it's $25 on PC for the season. It's $20 on PlayStation for the season, and I don't know how much it is on Xbox.
Oh, interesting. So they get you $20 a month instead of $60 at once.
Yeah, no, it's $20 for everything.
Really?
So you get $20, and then next month you get a free episode, and then a free episode the next month after. It's pretty awesome.
It's essentially like buying an iTunes season pass for a TV show. You pay one price up front, and then you get everything as it comes out.
Interesting, but is it a self-contained game, or is it a World of Warcraft type of big world?
The way that it's done is it's kind of like it's in the continuity of the comic, not of the show, and it takes place at the same time that Rick's in the coma, so it's somewhat of a prequel. And some of the characters, it follows a different main character. His name's Lee Everett, and he's got this little girl named Clementine. It's not his daughter or anything. He just happens to stumble upon her, and he's protecting her. And Glenn shows up, and Herschel shows up. And from what I've seen, the way that the game is played is every person who plays it, your choices react differently. Like, by the end, everyone who plays it, their ending will be not the same as your ending.
It's a choose-your-own-adventure.
Yeah, every decision...
That's funny.
Every decision you make actually lasts, and you'll say something and a character will remember that and then bring it up later, depending on what you said. Wow. And unlike other games where it's just sitting there and you're like, well, what do I say? And you have, you can just sit there and choose, just stare at it for a while and maybe go to a computer and look up the walkthrough and be like, well, I got a better choice if I say this. It's timed. You got 10 seconds to answer.
Oh, it's gotta be on the fly.
Wow.
Eh?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they really make you stick to your choices.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And it's gotten some pretty good reviews, and I played the demo and it's awesome, and I'm just waiting to pick it up, but I'll pick it up soon.
Then there's always the board game.
Yes.
Walking Dead Monopoly.
And no, there's an actual board game. It's by Cryptozoic. I don't know if Blanchard told you, but I manage a comic book store. That's what I do for my 9 to 5.
It's
9 to 9, but whatever. But yeah, there's a Walking Dead board game. And for yesterday, for Free Comic Book Day, we had 25 of them, and they all sold. They're all gone.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another fun-filled episode of the Untitled Mike and Laura Project. We got more fun filled for this episode than usual. Holy crap, I am Mike the Fist of Justice Laidman, and I'm not alone. I am joined with
Laura, cartoon fan 289, Thomas.
289?
I don't know. I'm just making
Is that like some terrible Yahoo
yeah,
email
at
handle?
Hotmail.
I see. Well, it's not just us today. As a matter of fact, all the fun that will fill this episode. See what I did there? Fill that. I'm lame. We actually owe somebody for that, and we want to bring him on to thank him right off the bat, and we're going to bring on. Well, who is it?
God, I don't even remember my own damn name.
Oh.
TM2 and Mike from the Geekcast Radio Network.
You're a little sick this morning there, Mike.
Oh, God, don't remind me.
Well, once again, thank you for setting this up. This is really cool. It's the first guest that we've ever had on the show, and it's not like it's a little guest, it's like an awesome guest. So thank you.
Let me just say this, that
note here.
The reason why, outside of mine and Mike's love for Metal Gear, the reason why I wanted to do this for you guys was because I had heard this person on Rob Paulson's Talking Toons podcast, and he was talking about how much he loves comics and how much he's a huge Walking Dead fan. And I know you guys, well, with Laura working at a comic shop and Mike draws comics, I know you guys love comics, and I know you guys are also fans of The Walking Dead.
Yes.
So my thought process here was, once we get this person on the line, we'll ask him, hey, you want to pimp out any of your upcoming projects, or what can you tell us that you're working on? So that way that kind of gets that out of the way. And then you guys can just have a discussion with him on different geeky stuff. And that person is none other than Mr. Phil Lamar.
Yay!
Yay!
You sounded really unexcited, considering how you've been like bouncing around the apartment the last few days. That's kind of...
I just killed a fruit fly on your transformer.
Oh. Is that why you're
I'm a little distracted. It's kind of gross.
Well, it's awesome.
Well, what else is new? I mean, if, you know, it's maybe it should be called the Distracted Mike and Laura Project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of ground into the wheel there.
The treads of the wheel.
Well, I'll have to watch
I hated
that.
To die.
I'll have to watch that after the show.
Sorry, I was distracted.
Killing insects with Transformers. Now, it would have been ironic if Laura killed it with an Insecticon.
That's true. I don't own any Insecticons.
I killed the Insecticon with Optimus Prime.
I have Black Arachnia. No, not Black Arachnia. Tarantulas, which is not an insect, but it's close.
Oh, he's a spider.
It's closest I got.
Spiders aren't insects, though.
Yeah, they're arachnids.
They're bugs, though.
Yes.
That's the one. Oh man, I went for a walk yesterday, or not Thursday, because the weather was so nice. Went for a lovely little walk. Forgot the one downside of summer. There were bugs everywhere in my hair, buzzing around. I was like, fucking bugs. One downside.
I see.
I mean, now that we've got an air conditioner, that's the one downside.
Is bugs?
Bugs.
I see.
On the swimming.
Right. Did we lose you, Mike?
No, I'm okay. Still here.
You just got really
quiet.
Yeah,
I mean, he's just probably lost.
No, I'm still here. I'm just waiting for the conversation to move away from bugs, because I hate bugs and insects and snakes and
all that. Are you afraid of them? I'm not afraid of them. They're
I'm deathly afraid of snakes.
Really?
Deathly afraid of snakes, yeah.
I want a pet snake, but I'm afraid it will get out and eat my cat.
I nearly killed all three of my cousins, Rachel, Robbie, and Cassie, because one year, years and years ago, I don't know, I was like... 16, 17, God, long ass time ago. They started teasing me with, at the time I didn't know this, but at the time it was a rubber snake. And it just, they just frightened the hell out of me.
Now, what is it about snakes that scare you?
Everything.
Hey, you want to hear a funny story? When I was probably about 18, the computer wasn't working quite right. So I'm like, what's going on? Crack open the computer, and it wasn't even dead. It was just curled up around some stuff getting warm. It was a garbage snake inside the computer.
Oh, my
God. In the computer?
In the computer. It got into the basement where the office was and climbed into the computer because it was nice and warm because snakes like the warmth. And it was awesome. Like, I picked it up, and I took it out, and I put it outside.
Oh, my God.
I like snakes, though. I got a picture of me with a 20-foot-long albino, like, python.
That's pretty pimp.
Yeah.
If you like snakes.
I love snakes.
If you don't like snakes, then that's like fucking, oh shit.
Have you ever held one? They feel so weird, like kind of just like.
Oh. I've never held one, but I've touched a snake.
No, when they're actually moving around you, and because they contract and relax their muscles to move, right, because they don't have legs. It feels really neat.
Okay.
I think I'm freaking out Blanchard. You can hear him like.
Cold chills running down my spine.
Now, I got a question for you here, Blanchard. Do the big ones scare you more because they're big and they can eat you, or the little ones scare you more because they're little and they can climb inside you?
All of the above.
No, this is a more, which one? You have to
pick. No, all of the above. It doesn't matter. If it's to do with snakes or insects or everything about that stuff just freaks me the hell out.
What about like a lizard?
Yeah, that too.
What if it was a cartoon snake?
What if it was solid snake?
If it's a cartoon or video game, it's not like, you know, that's different. I mean, obviously, I don't sit here and watch Anaconda, but
I was actually going to ask you if that.
I found the comic book adaptation of Arachnophobia in the basement when I was putting comics down.
What? That exists?
Yeah, that's a thing. That's what I said. I'm like, this is a thing. I want to watch that movie again. I haven't watched that in forever.
I only remember the part where the people are eating popcorn and the spiders are in the popcorn, and then it like cuts back to them and they're dead, and the spiders are like coming out of their mouths and eyes and stuff.
Oh my god!
John Goodman's in that movie.
Isn't
he's like the comic relief in that movie?
Fucking what's his name? The actor who's in it.
Oh god. Wasn't it Jeff Goldblum? I don't even know.
No, it's not even it's like Jeff Daniels? Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels was the main character, is he?
That was a great movie. Yeah, this was the cover of the
What
else is Jeff Daniels in?
Jeff Daniels? He's in Dumb and Dumber. He was George Washington.
Anyway, that was a great movie. I think we should watch it.
Okay, it's probably on.
Yeah, you guys should watch it and do a commentary on it.
I remember when the giant spider falls in love with the little spider and they make all the spider babies.
I don't remember that movie outside of the
Where's Wilbur when you really need him?
I get it. It's a Charlotte Webb joke.
Yeah, they announced a Dumb and Dumber sequel.
I did hear that. Yeah, untitled Dumb and Dumber sequel.
They're stealing our name.
Well, considering I stole it off of, like, that kind of a thing. So, remember, our show is entirely ripped off of the untitled 3D Shark Project.
Shut up.
That's where our name came from.
That's for shut up?
What?
I love you.
Okay.
Shark 3DD, Piranha 3DD, oh, God.
It's all there. It's all there for everybody.
Yes.
Ugh, that was kind of gross, actually.
You okay?
So I think without any further ado, we will jump over to the discussion with Mr. Phil Lamar.
Hooray!
Yay, I'm excited.
I got a vibe tells me I should be sitting in on this scene for a while.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm awesome. Joining me is my lovely co-host, Laura Thomas. And you had a weird name for this episode. What was it again?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Oh, it was
about... my nickname.
Yes,
yeah,
your nickname.
It was like Cartoon Fan 289. Yes.
Well, we're here with
one line name.
Yeah, new handle that I've come up with.
That's
but
right.
It represents the things I love.
Well, we're so glad to be talking to you, Phil. We want to talk to you about tons of stuff. I mean, we could talk to you about anything on your IMDb list, which I'm pretty sure if we printed it out, would be taller than our apartment building, and we live in the tallest building in the city.
You can't ask me about anything, because honestly, there's some things I don't remember.
we have a question that we wanted to ask you, but you know what? We might as well ask it right now, because you're in everything. I mean, we just established that. Do people come up to you all the time and go, I really loved you as this character? And you're like, that wasn't me. Like, you know for a fact exactly who that was. And you're like, nah, that wasn't me. Not so much that I don't remember being that guy, but
you know it's a fact. Well, it's funny because I get more confused recognition from on-camera stuff than voiceover stuff.
Really?
Yes. And I think it's because the people who follow voiceover stuff just pay more attention to detail.
Mm.
But like people will come up and ask me and say, oh, yeah. Hey, you were on In Living Color, right? Oh, I loved you on that. It's like, no. Very close. Very close. Off by about 7 years and 3 hours. Or they'll confuse me with one of the other black guys from Mad TV. Hey, you were doing those 7-Up commercials. Nope. He's about a foot taller than me. Yeah. But I'm trying to think if there's ever any voiceover stuff that people get confused. Usually not. Although there have been times where people knew something that I didn't remember. Or like, I don't think I did. And then I go back and look at my calendar and be like, oh, right, yes. Like somebody the other day posted, it's great to see Phil as Jarvis in Ultimate Spider-Man. I'm like, no, I was Jarvis in Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And then I went and looked, and I'm like, oh, right. I did one episode of Ultimate Spider-Man where they had a Iron Man guest star. It's like, oops, right, sorry.
Now, would that be something maybe you recorded at, like, the same time? Because you were just kind of like, hey, do you want to just record that while we're at it? We're working on Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Is that maybe, like, months difference?
Well, one thing is there's usually 9 months to a year between when you record something and when anybody ever sees it. And that was a thing where I didn't audition for it, and it wasn't a show that I worked on at any other time. Like, I think I went in for one day because they said, oh, we're doing Iron Man. Let's use the same people that did the voices from Avengers. So, you know, you didn't have the, here's an audition. Because usually you get an audition, you give them a voice, they send it back. Then they say, oh, we liked it. Come in and record. So there's at least 2 points to you know, form a line. That one, there was just one. Hey, you want to go in and do this? Okay. And it was probably two scenes or something. And it was a show that wasn't my show, so it sort of blew through my my brain pan.
Well, can you, like, is there anything besides, like, on the topic of Jarvis and the Avengers? Anything about that show that thoughts on that, or maybe have you seen the new movie yet? Is it amazing? We're going to see it this afternoon.
No, I haven't had a chance. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. Although I'm very, I mean, I'm excited for any number of reasons. A buddy of mine, Jesse Garcia, that I did the Pee Wee Herman show, is in it as one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And of course, I remember when he got it because he called me. He's like, hey, I'm doing this thing. What should I look? Okay, here's what you need to read. Look at this, look at this, look at this. I'm going to send you, you don't need to read the Steranko Nick Fury stuff, but you need to see the images. So I'm going to send you those, you know.
Now, for anyone, like, on that topic, like, we've heard you're a big comic fan. Is there any, like, books that you would, for our listeners, like, if you're going to watch The Avengers, make sure you read blank?
Ooh, gosh. I don't know. The thing I would say, well, I don't know if anybody can find it, but the Avengers Annual with Archon, drawn by George Perez, is to me one of the, like, quintessential Avengers stories. But I'm a big DC guy. I don't have, like, a huge Avengers library. You know, I pick it up every once in a while when there's a storyline or an artist or something that I really dig. But I'm trying to think. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to recommend that the way I'd be able to recommend, like, you know, Batman or Justice League stuff.
Well, so are you excited in that vein? Dark Knight coming.
Yes. Yes.
Now, for one, is there Batman books that you would be like? Because I've heard, like, you know, working where I do, like, it's like people are Nightfall. We can't keep it on our shelves because of the Bane stuff, right? So.
Oh. See, that's funny because that was my big eras were the Neil Adams run in the late 70s, although I think I had that stuff in collections, mm-hmm. like the, you know, the mini collections. The thing that I would get people to read is Gene Colan's run on Detective in, like, what is that, the late 80s? Because that, to me, captures the Dark Knight feel, like, decades before Dark Knight. I mean, mm-hmm. it was so moody it was a strong Batman. I mean, I thought that was the best precursor to the original Dark Knight, to Frank Miller's Dark Knight. That to me set the pattern for that, because it was like a solid Batman instead of like the long, thin Jim Aparo, Neil Adams, like I'm lanky Batman, you know. This was like solid. This guy looks like he could kick down a door, and did.
Nice.
Now, for, you said you're a big DC guy. We're mm-hmm. a couple months into the New 52.
Almost a year at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
True. What are your thoughts on where it's been going so far?
I was listening to you guys' episode, you know, on the first week. I was very much of two minds when the New 52 came out. Because I I can't say I'm anti-continuity, but I'm a big proponent of not being a slave to continuity. You know, I don't think there's any reason somebody writing a book today has to be married to the mistake somebody made 13 years before.
You know? That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because like,
what, I mean, you're going to do something bad just because somebody did it first? I mean, it doesn't make any sense as far as like being creative. Like, you change things. Now, I think that there is a skill and a talent in changing a continuing storyline in a organic, like, really good way. You can't just like go, well, Bobby woke up and it was a dream. That's you know, that's bad writing, period.
There was a rip in time. You know, he's traveling through time. That's how he came back to life, because that's happened twice in the past couple years.
No. He punched a hole in time. Yeah. That's the best one.
Yeah.
Wait, what was that?
That was Superboy Prime punched a hole in time, that was great. How Jason Todd came back.
Yeah, I mean, that was to me the biggest argument for the New 52 was crap like that.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, let's not make somebody have to punch a hole in time, or Superboy is evil now. You know, let's just be able to erase all of that junk and start again. I mean, that was the best thing about the Ultimate series. Like, okay, let's make these heroes cool without having to, like, give Peter Parker a mohawk and, you know, now he drives a motorcycle and is, you know.
Actually, I kind of want to see that version.
But see, that's the thing. Now, it's like, okay, well, this is, you know, faux-hawk Spider-Man. It's a whole other line, and you don't have to worry about all the stuff that came before. You don't have to justify why this guy who was at Empire State University 25 years ago still can't get a job, you know?
Yeah.
Books in the New 52. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, to me, the best thing about the New 52 was, you know, getting rid of the bad stuff. The worst thing about it was that there were 52 of them. Because the thing I kept telling people was, you know, it's like, okay, Stan and Jack launched maybe like 2-3 books at a time. Maybe. And, you know, you were still going to get an Ant-Man in the bunch. So, you know, and they were geniuses, you know, unqualified geniuses. So if you're going to try to launch 52 books at once, you're basically asking for 2/3 of them to fail.
Yeah, and like so far, 6 have been canceled, and the new ones to replace them just started coming out this week with like Dial H, which I can't see going well. But at least it's not Marvel, who seem to release 52 new titles every week. It's kind of ridiculous.
I was actually pleasantly surprised with how high the percentage was on the 52 on the new books that they launched. Mm-hmm. You know, it was much better than I would have expected. You know, I mean, like, wow, this one's good. This one's good. Wow, that one's good too. This one, there's a lot of stuff that just you're not particularly going to care about. Yeah. You know, I mean, Western. Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, are there any books that you found have like stood out to you that you weren't expecting to really get into, but you're like, man, this is actually quite good?
Well, All-Star Western was one that I, you know, like, somebody said, oh, you got to read it. I'm like, really? Jonah Hex? Really? And But that first storyline in Gotham, I really, really dug. I have since stopped buying it. But, I mean, because I'm just not a Western guy, you know, and I never have been. And I found that I was responding more to that story than the concept of the book overall.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I mean, there were a bunch of things that I bought for sentimental reasons. Either I knew people working on them. Or, you know, like Static Shock. Yeah, I gotta buy it. what else? I was really pleased with Catwoman, Batwing. Those are both the Judd Winnick books. And that's, you know, that's a buddy. I don't know. I've been going back and forth on the Superman titles. I love Scott Snyder's Batman. I think that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even back on Batman and Robin, although I'm not a huge Damian fan. But I'm still liking that book a lot.
Awesome. Yeah, if I can recommend, especially now since the first trade came out this week.
Buy it from her store.
Which one?
Animal Man by Jeff Lemire and Travel Foreman is fantastic, and it's actually crossing over with Scott Snyder's Swamp Thing, and the two of them are like best bros, even though Jeff's in Toronto and Scott's in like New York, and they're like best friends, and they get drunk and talk on Twitter all the time, and it's hilarious. But anyway, I highly recommend them. They're quite good. Like, Jeff Lemire's come to our shop a few times. I've had the pleasure to talk to him. And like, I find with these guys writing a lot of this New 52 stuff, they're all really just nice guys who you can tell appreciate that people are reading their books, which is nice to see. You're not getting the Frank Millers who are like, screw Occupy Wall Street, screw my fans. Yeah.
Oh, wait, that reminds me. What's up with the, speaking of, because you made me, you said Frank Miller. I actually thought of J. Michael Straczynski and basically all the old arrogant guys. Beyond Watchmen. What's the word on that?
We have, because like, we have a subscription service and the holds and everything like that. And we're getting tons of people who, it's so funny. You get the people who are coming in and they're like, yeah, they shouldn't, you know, bastardize Alan Moore's work. Let me add every title to my list.
And right.
Like, at the same time, it's like this, like, it's stupid and it's like ripping them off. I want to buy them all.
Well,
whatever. We're making money. I say whatever you want.
That's comic book people in a nutshell. Come on.
Yeah. I mean,
what was the joke I was making somewhere? It's like junkies, but much worse. Because junkies at least wait till they're out of dope to go buy. Comic book junkies show up on the same day every week.
Yep.
Whether they finish their heroin or not.
Well, I don't know if you heard it. One of the main things that's happened this week, because the first Batman hardcover is supposed to be out this week, the Night of Owls or Court of Owls, was supposed to be out this week, and it's actually coming out next week because the truck from the publisher was in a fatal collision and all the books on it were destroyed. Oh. So, and like, I don't know if you go to your local shop and it's like, oh, you know, our supplier, because it's all the same supplier, shorted us on that book you were looking for, that came damaged. You know, it happens all the time because they have a monopoly and nobody really tries that hard there. Anyway, it has made, as much as it's kind of mean, it has made the best excuse for things not showing up all week. It's like, oh, we didn't get enough Avengers versus X-Men number 3. Destroyed in a truck accident. Like, it's like everything is just, no, it was destroyed. It'll come later. Like, and because someone died, it's like, oh, someone died. You know what? I can wait. It's, you know what? I feel so bad. Never mind. I won't complain. We've had two complaints. Only two people kept complaining. It's like, someone died.
Considering the nature of certain people's personalities, I'm shocked it's only two.
Yeah.
Seriously. Say, I feel the same way. I'm like, really? Really? All of these OCD guys out in their basement really found the ability to care about another person. I like that. I think your store must have weeded out.
We're not the typical store. Like, people walk in and they're like, it's not a dungeon. Like, we're very much like a family friendly type shop. So our readers
are sunlight and girls.
Oh yeah.
There's
yeah.
big windows.
Most of our employees, like, I'm the manager, and then my assistant manager is also a woman, and one of our other part timers is a woman. And the manager at our, because we have three locations, the manager at one of our other shops is a woman. Like, we're very much like,
I'm surprised
not typical.
Any of the real geek guys ever come in the door? It's like, oh, she's still in there. I'm gonna wait till she leaves. I'm just like hovering outside the door. It's like, you know, like teens outside of a convenience store. Can you buy me a, you know,
yeah.
boys?
We do get the occasional, because both the owners of the shop, because we're at the headquarters store, that's where I'm at, is the main one, and both the owners work there. And so you do get the occasional guy who it's like, can I speak to the manager? And I'm like, that's me. And they're like, oh, is there, you know, it's like, I'll go get the owner. Like, you just tell.
Can I speak to someone with a penis?
Yeah. Every once in a while. Or they'll ask me a question, don't like my answer. See my boss, ask him, and he'll be like, Laura, actually, do you know? And he'll just directly ask me, like my boss will ask me, and the guy is just kind of like, oh, never mind.
The best ones are the guys that call you the girl.
Yeah, I've gotten the girl before. It's like the girl told me. It's like, oh my goodness, yeah.
Wow.
But thankfully, that's like 1% of customers at our shop. Like it really is. But like, you know, a few bad apples spoil the bunch and everything.
That's hilarious.
But I'm finding with things like the movies, the new 52, we're getting a lot of people who are your, you know, average person walking down the street checking out comics for the first time. I find it's been, you know, and I hope it's the same for every other shop because, you know, it's, if the other shops fail, then we fail too, right? So, I mean, I hope everybody's kind of...
No, you grow. Haven't you ever heard of Walmart? You grow off the bones and blood of your opponents. You eat them. No. No, it sounds like your shop is particularly positioned for crossover market. I mean, and I think, you know, when you're running a shop, you make a choice. You know, is this the shop that I'm going to sit here in, or is this a shop that I'm going to open up to? You know, am I going to make it attractive? I mean, because I think a lot of people who get into comics aren't, you know, focused on other people. It's like, well, we just have everything here in a box because that's where I always kept everything, was in a box, and everything in the box is alphabetical. You know, it's just like... That's the way they think. You know?
Like our store's been around for about 15 years, and it's definitely been, like, I've been with the shop for 5 years, and it's just definitely been a growth. Like, you get, the more people you kind of get ideas from, like, we've had people in the shop, like, that work there and everything, and it's just the more new people, the more new ideas, and we definitely, you know, make an active attempt to grow. And you can see the shops that are thriving do the same thing, and the shops that are like, nope, I'm staying by the old guard, they're failing. And, you know, that's not good for the industry that, you know, some people just are stuck in their ways. But I think, like I said, with the movies, like, I mean, this year is a big year for movies. I mean, with Avengers, Dark Knight,
Spider-Man,
it's nothing but going up. Like the big event yesterday, like we had more people in the shop than we've ever had before that have never been before.
That's great.
Did you go to Free Comic Book Day? Did you check that out?
I did not because I was with my family and we had tons and tons of stuff to do. But my kids are big comic book readers when it's not free. So it's funny. I mean, it's just because I read them, it's just part of our life. They're always around the house. Although, wait, can I ask you a question? And Mike, we'll get to you in a minute.
Okay.
Because you were talking about, you know, the growth and everything, and I'm sitting here looking at my iPad with, you know, these. Are you threatened by digital comics?
You know what? I get asked this by a lot of people all the time, and Marvel and DC now, like Marvel's doing it's almost like that scratch off lottery ticket style. You scratch off a little panel in the back of the comic, and it'll give you a digital code, and you can actually download the digital copy of the comic when you buy it. With DC, you can get the combo pack for a dollar more, and that comes with the code for the digital copy. So you can put it on your iPad, your e-reader, whatever, on your internet. And people are all the time, they're like, are you threatened by it? Do you think, you know, your store is going to suffer? And it's like, stores that aren't growing and stores that, you know, aren't looking ahead definitely probably will suffer from it. But we don't sell just comics, A. And B, like, a lot of people who go to the shops, they go not just for the comics. They go to talk to people about comics. So we've got our Wednesday regulars, and they're in, and they like to stand at the counter and chat for half an hour about, you know, their favorite characters and what's going on with this and how much they loved the Avengers movie. And like, just that's part of the experience, is actually going to the shop. And we get told this all the time, is that a big part of what people come back to us for isn't so much just the books, but the atmosphere of the shop. And I think that's one of the things that shops where people feel welcome have going for them, because it is, you know, when you go to a store once a week, every week for years, you're going to build up a rapport with the people working there. They're going to get to know you by name, and everybody is really, you know, like, you get that going for you too. Like, everybody's glad to be there, and that's a big benefit to the shop. Whereas maybe like a big bookstore, like I know in the States, a lot of them have had problems. Like, you don't have that same atmosphere that people are drawn to. The other thing is, most people still at this point would prefer to pick up a physical copy of the book rather than, you know, hold it on their iPad. We get people who are like, yeah, I'll read them like that, you know, to sample one issue, and then I'll come in and I'll buy the graphic novel. because they right. still prefer to hold it in their hands. So there's, at this point in the game, there's still a lot going for us. And like I said, our store carries like the toys, graphic novels, statues. Like we try to have a wide variety of stuff. And then right. you get things like the Big Bang Theory, and that just drives people into the shop like crazy. So
right. T-shirt well, sales.
Oh my goodness. We can't keep Bazinga shirts and that Sheldon kid on our shelves. Like it's ridiculous.
No, it's funny because I asked that not just as a generic thing, but I mean, from my industry, it's a concern as well. And I tend to be sort of the futurist doomsayer in my circles, you know, because I constantly go around to, you know, the actors unions and stuff saying, okay, when I recorded voiceover for Metal Gear 4, we were recording our voices to footage of the Japanese mocap cast acting out the entire thing. And it's like, okay, they're all in these mocap suits, motion capture suits, and they're on these, you know, giant wooden, you know, set pieces and all that. And then I go watch the making of Avatar, and it's basically the same thing. So to me, 10 years from now, the video game technology and the movie making technology will dovetail, and what, you know, the all this old media, movies, is going to become video games. They're going to, you know, and that can be a good thing in terms of entertainment, certainly, or it could be a bad thing because, I mean, it depends on how it goes forward. I think with you guys are in somewhat a slightly better position because the digital market can actually open up your industry to people who otherwise would not be in it. You know, I mean, there are a whole generation of kids or two that are growing up not reading comic books because they're not in, you know, the drugstores and the mainstream, you know, places that they just come across, you know, say, hey, here's 10 cents, buy a comic on my way home, the way they used to in the 30s. You know, that doesn't happen. I mean, well, most of these kids aren't reading anything, you know, in particular, but you know, this is a chance for comic books to reach out and actually add on to, you know, your pool of consumers in a way that for us in the, you know, other old media stuff, we're cannibalizing ourselves. Like the people who are, you know, pirating movies are the people who would have gone to the movies. You know, you're not adding anything to it. So it's just something that's on my mind a lot. And I was curious what your thought was.
It's funny because you're talking about the mocap suits and stuff. Maybe you're going to find yourself in a mocap suit soon. That's where your industry's going.
Well, you know what's funny is that I had a chance to on Infamous 2.
Oh, really?
They asked me if I wanted to do the – because I did the character John in Infamous and I was doing the voice again in Infamous 2. And they asked me if I wanted to do the motion capture. I'm like, yeah, no. I mean, I didn't really know much about it. If I knew what I knew now, I would have said – yes. But at the time I thought, you know, video game voicing is so much harder than regular animation. And I had this horrible image of, motion capture being the same thing, like being that much harder than regular on camera acting. It's like, oh my God, it's like, you know, a 6-hour movie and you're doing everything alone in a, you know, in a suit, and like, oh, hell no. But from people that I've talked to who do it, like Crispin Freeman, it's not the same thing. It's not like 5 times the amount of work for, you know, 2/3 or a fraction of the money. And I will stop hijacking the podcast, and I'm going to...
No, it's fine. You know, it's, again, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you back on was because of the fact that I heard you with Rob on Talking Toons, and I'm like, I need more Phil. 1 hour is not enough.
But like that's kind of the way our show generally is. Like we just generally have conversations. Like, and I think that's what people who listen to us are listening for, is just that, you know, natural flow back and forth. And it's much, I don't know, I like it a lot better. You know, you just talk about what interests you and everything, and then, you know, Phil.
Yeah.
No, what do you think about this?
Right. Exactly. Well, Jay Leno. Yeah, let's see. I understand that you just. yeah. No, I love the show. I think your show is really good.
Thank you.
That's awesome. I'm going to take that quote and I'm
going to. Yeah, that is going to be everywhere.
because it was so well written and poetic. Yes, I think the show was very good of showing.
We think the other reason people tune into the show is to listen to us fight. That happens a lot too.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed that.
You guys aren't fighting. The show is being like not at all dirty or anything.
I think you might be right.
It's too early. It's really too early.
It's too early. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, we had somebody say that last week's episode was the most obscene episode they'd ever heard. So.
But it was like as a compliment.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay, now I got to bring this up because you brought up yourself and you've opened Pandora's box because you brought up Vamp in Metal Gear Solid 4 and I am like the biggest Metal Gear fan there is. Like
Handle is like Solid Mike.
Yeah. That's my gamer tag and I love Metal Gear so much. And I remember when I was first playing Metal Gear Solid 2. And have you played the games as well?
Yeah.
Oh, I just recalled in Nerdish Glee. The very first time I was playing 2 and Vamp shows up on screen and cuz Vamp had been in the trailers. And I remember, like, oh, man, that looks really cool. That looks really cool. But in the games, they actually have the voice actor's name pop up next to the character when they first appear. And when your name showed up, I was like, wait, what? And I did a double take at that. And just from that point on, I was like, no way, that's Phil Lamar. And I spent probably my first playthrough not so much enjoying the Vamp scenes as just going, that's Phil Lamar. Like, just listening for the Phil Lamar-ness in the Vamp lines.
There's not much there. It's funny, because I played the Metal Gear, I mean, there's so many versions, but I played the version before that and loved it. It was such a great game. And I was at a studio, and the woman who was doing the voice casting for it was a woman I had worked for, Chris Zimmerman.
Yeah.
And I begged her for an audition.
Oh.
It's like, I want to be part of this game. Well, I don't know. What do you have? Anything? And I think I auditioned for the DARPA chief.
Oh, really?
And then she said, wait a minute. Why don't you try this one? And it was this, you know, those drawings are like very almost abstract. And it's like, oh, okay. And she described this guy. He's very creepy. And he's called Vamp, but he's not really a vampire, but maybe we don't know, you know, like it was kind of vague. So all of a sudden, I think he was like, okay, well, here, how does someone sound dead? And I just like pulled as much breath as I could out of the voice and just made him sound creepy and dead and horny. And like,
my queen, you won't believe who I've found.
You know, and it's just like, is he happy? Is he got his pants? It's like every time he talks, it's just like, ew, you know? And that's what we were shooting for. It's like, she's like, and that's actually what Chris said after I did the thing. She's like, okay, ew, that's perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, like every line comes out and it like is just getting under your skin. Like every line, even like, this is water underneath me. You know, like that line even still gets under you. It's like a throwaway, like, here's water. But still, it's creepy in the Vamp voice. Like everything's creepy in the Vamp voice.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, it was the bar was set pretty high because you're, you know, up there with Hader, you know, and he's doing like the quintessential. I mean, he basically created that video game voice archetype. Because, like, you know, since Snake, every lead in every video game sounds like this. Everyone is gritty and groundy. Like, they all sound like that, you know? And I'm pretty sure he was, like, the first real hero in that vein. I mean, because I feel like before Snake,
you had a lot more of this. Heroes of games, you know?
And also the fact that game added the real cinematic quality to video games. People said, oh, okay, now we can actually play this. You know, we don't have to, it's not just getting through the cutscenes. You know, the people creating the games actually were making them to be seen. You know?
Yeah, well, when the very first Metal Gear Solid came, and it was just like jump straight from gameplay straight into the cutscene. There's no, because it was the first game, there was really no difference. Because if you played like, say, Resident Evil 2, you'd play that game and it would jump from pre-rendered cutscene where the character models are really nice and shiny and smooth, and then it cuts to like a box that walks, you know, right, immediately after that. And it, you know, it sort of took you out of the moment a little bit when it made that jump. But in Metal Gear Solid, because it was the same model in the game as it was in the cutscenes, there was that flow. Like, you immediately just jumped right into it. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Now, another question that I... When you did two, basically Vamp is like, oh, Vamp dies but doesn't die. Vamp keeps coming back. Did you have hopes like, yeah, I'm coming back. Coming back for three. I mean, they even stuck that scene in at the end where he's staring at them, like, in the background.
Well, I mean, you always hope, but I mean, when you're playing basically a boss, that's not where you put your bet. You know, it's like, well, I'm here to die. You know, if I don't die, they never get to the end of the game, and really, then no one will buy the next one. But yes, I was very excited when I came back for four. Mm-hmm. You know. But yeah, I wasn't expecting it.
Okay, well, before we move off the Metal Gear topic, now correct me if I'm wrong here, but there's a trailer for Metal Gear Rising, and I'm fairly certain I heard your voice in that trailer.
You may have.
Really?
I'm not at liberty to say yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whether or not I'm in anything.
Really?
That may or may not have been something.
You know what, though? That's a lot better answer than the last time I asked someone that question. It was, no, I'm not in that.
If I said, no, I'm not in it, that would be disclosure. I would be saying.
Oh, I get it. I'm learning very many things.
It's a non-disclosure agreement. I cannot disclose anything.
Oh,
excellent,
sneaky.
Excellent. All right, well,
let me temper that by also saying that, generally speaking, I don't know much. Half the time, as I've told you, I don't know if I'm in the game or not. But, yes,
I remember
that is all I'm at liberty to say.
I remember hearing even David Hayter say that one time. Like, they were like, Metal Gear Solid 4 is on the way. Here's the first trailer. And it was in Japanese. And he's like, I don't even know. I have no idea. They haven't called me. So.
That's funny. He was lying.
Now, for games, are there any game series that you, like, are a fan of or you've seen that you would like to kind of get on board with? Like, I know you said you for Metal Gear, you were like, I need a part in this. Is there any games coming out now you're like, I would love to be a part of this?
Arkham, the Arkham Asylum series.
Yeah.
I mean, but that goes back to, you know, my comic book roots. Generally speaking, these days I'm either playing a superhero battle game or MLB The Show. That's pretty much all I do. Because unfortunately, like, I don't have the time to play through a world anymore. And it's a shame because there's some really amazing stuff. And I still buy games. I just never play them. Like, because Nolan North is a friend, so I picked up Uncharted. I'm like, oh my God, this is so amazing. I'm still in the first, you know, first adventures. Like, I suppose if I ever got into this building, this would be really amazing. You know?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of those games. So if you ever do get a chance, check those out, because those are awesome games.
You're talking about, I play Skyrim. I've got a good 200 hours into that one. I highly recommend not jumping on it if you have a life.
Well, see, Skyrim, Mass Effect, you know, all of these games, I mean, the stuff they're doing is amazing, you know, but it really does require a commitment, you know, as the worlds get bigger and fuller, you know. I mean, the other thing I would really, really want to do is the Old Republic.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep.
But, I mean, I don't know. I've always got a weird thing about online games, you know. I don't know. I mean, chat rooms, all this stuff. A buddy of mine was saying, oh, you got to go on Reddit and do an AMA. And I'm like, okay. I don't know. Just the anonymity of the internet freaks me out.
Talk about that Reddit forum.
Oh, my God.
Have you seen that thing going around about the Reddit forum? People made throwaway accounts and confessed their greatest secrets. And, like, these aren't, like, you know, I love My Little Pony. It's, you know, all about, like if people found out about this. Felonies, yeah, murder, like, suicide,
I murdered
incest.
My daughter's rapist and made it look like a suicide.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. After, like, and it's 30,000 comments about this kind of stuff. And I was like, man, my life is so normal.
See, you've proven my point. That's, I mean, and for me, it was just like, okay, the 14-year-old soccer-playing girl from La Habra may actually be a 50-year-old serial rapist from, you know, Kansas. That freaks me out enough. But now the idea that, like, well, now there's, you know, tens of thousands of people who are all insane freaks.
And you're some of them.
Sorry? Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them aren't that crazy. Like, there's one, the probably the least crazy one, although entertaining. It sounds almost like it's a romantic comedy movie plot. There was a guy, and a girl asked him to house sit their cat while her family went away on vacation. And while they were gone, he read her diary and used everything in it to marry her.
Kind of what Mike did with me with our Facebook.
Oh,
not to that degree.
Oh, damn.
Ah,
I can't believe she just went there.
Isn't that romantic?
Hey, it worked, didn't it?
It definitely did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are a lot of things that work that really shouldn't.
Yes.
I put a little bit of chloroform in her meal every day until eventually she just did whatever I said.
Now I don't have to put it in anymore. I saved so much money on chlorophyll.
Oh, goodness.
It's like, Laura, you should check your meals.
Actually, I'm not a very good cook, so she doesn't have to worry about that because I don't usually end up cooking.
Whenever he cooks, all he makes me are these shakes. It's weird.
Okay.
Anyway.
I know we've gotten my fangasm out of the way. And I know that, Laura, you had one. As soon as I first gave the inkling that we were going to be talking to Phil, you blew up and you're like, oh, we're going to talk to this guy. And I had no idea who you were talking about, but...
I am, like, and a lot of people who know me know that I'm a big fan of, and I still watch them all the time because of things like the internet, I can watch them on, and I wish there was DVDs because I'd buy them in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I watch a lot of kids' cartoons, like a big SpongeBob fan, Hey Arnold, but I grew up watching One Saturday Morning on ABC, and I love, and my sister and I would watch The Weekenders all the time. Like, I'll still go on YouTube. There's like 20 episodes on YouTube, and I rewatch them all the time.
Because they're not out on DVD, are they?
No, and I like Disney. It's like, here, take my money. Like, just take it.
Nope, no thank you. No thank you. Just leave it on that table over there. We don't want it.
Like, for that, like, I like Carver. The whole cast is hilarious. Like, I absolutely love
them. You know you were a Tino lover. Admit it. You're just saying that because I'm here right now. But you loved Tino, didn't you?
I loved
Or perhaps Lore. I don't know.
Oh, the whole cast in general, like the characters I found were just so well, like, flushed out. Like, they were, like, and I find you're getting more of that now with shows, like, and I think that's why the My Little Pony fan base is so large, is because the characters aren't just these one-dimensional, like, you know, it wasn't like, Lore likes sports, Carver wants to be cool, you know, Tish is smart, you know, Tino's neurotic. They were more than that, and I think that's what really made that show stand out to me, is that the characters weren't so one-dimensional, and, like, I just... You know, I wanted to say I was a big fan, and if you had any thoughts on
this. Yeah, you did a fantastic job. Hello?
Hello?
Yep. Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I loved that show. That was, was that my first show that I was, like, one of the leads in? I think it might have been. And it was also just a great group of people. You know, Doug Langdale, who wrote it, you know, and he had a concept. He had, like, a thing that, you know, to sell to the network, but he also had his own concept, you know, because, like you were saying, like, the character types, they all had types that you could put on paper, but that's not what he was, that's not the story he was telling. He was telling a story about these kids, you know, and, like, I think his idea was that they were all, like, kids of single parents, and like this was the weekend they were at this parent's house. Or no, actually, that's not true. That's not true. Some of them. No, Tino. What, did Tino have a dad?
No, Tino's dad lived on the East Coast. See, yeah, I know all that show.
Yeah, no, Carver had both parents. That's what it was.
Yeah, who were working professionals.
Right, right. Was I Carver? I think I was. I can't remember if I was Carver's dad or not. But yeah, the idea was that these were, you know, it was a reflection of Doug's childhood, you know, and the people. So he was writing people, not types, mm-hmm. you know. And it was a fantastic cast. I mean, Kath Soucie, Gray Delisle, and Jason Marsden, they're all not only incredibly talented, but so nice. It was just always such a joy. No, that was a fantastic show. Weekenders was so much fun. And yeah, you know, it's not, you know, heavy duty comedy or hardcore, you know, anything. But to me, it was like Foster's.
Is it different working on like a kids show, like a younger show, than it is working on a more mature show?
Yes, it's dirtier. Because like when you work on a kids show, you know, everything you're saying tends to be very light, and then in between, people just like get insane. And I think I was always wondered about working on Drawn Together. Do you remember that cartoon?
Yes. Yeah, we've got that on DVD.
I would always imagine that, like, during their recording sessions, they would have nothing to say in between takes because they had said all of the crazy, filthy stuff that you would normally say in between takes while it was recording.
That makes sense.
It's true.
So I always imagine them just sort of sitting there.
I've heard rumors of, like, amazing gag reels that will never see the light of day of, like, famous cartoon character voice actors in character saying the dirtiest things.
Like the Thundercats one?
Yeah, the Thundercats
one. Oh, is that something that got out?
Yeah, years ago from the original 80s Thundercats show, and it's like Lion-O, and he's trying to say one of the techno babble lines, and he screws it up, and he's like, what the fuck am I talking about? Like halfway through.
The guy who does Panthro in one is like obviously drunk. Yeah.
Well, the one with Panthro with Earl Hyman, he's like, Samoflange? What the fuck is a Samoflange?
Oh, yeah, you get a lot of that.
And Mumra, and he's like, show me your tits and stuff like that. I imagine there's so much gold that will never come out, but I'm sure there's engineers who have that stuff just hidden away. They're like, you got to hear this gag reel that Phil LaMarr left on Justice League.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and they have it all. So yes, we have to keep our eyes open for when engineers retire, because that's when these things tend to leak out. When somebody's getting ready to head to Arizona, it's like, all right, I don't have to worry about losing my job. Here you go.
Now you said you had kids. Do your kids watch your shows?
Not a lot of them, because my kids are young, so many of them aren't quite appropriate. And some of the ones, I mean, what are the ones that they watched? I've done a few Phineas and Ferbs. They love that. That's a great show.
Great performer for the win.
Thank you for that, Mike.
They watched Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends when it was on. And that was Lauren Faust who rebooted My Little Pony. Mm-hmm. What else did they watch? Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Although some of them are a little intense for my younger one, you know, I mean, cause that show gets dark. Are you guys Star Wars heads at all?
I like Star Wars, but I don't have a channel that shows, shows the Clone Wars.
We like Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff, everything.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's some really, really good stuff.
I saw when they did the movie, but other than that, I haven't seen
the
too
movie.
Much.
The movie was actually, although the movie, I thought the acting in the movie was better than the prequel trilogy. Mm-hmm. That was where it began. It's just gone up from there in terms
that's what I've heard. Yeah, is like
visuals, writing, characters, everything. You know, yeah, Dave Filoni's done like a really amazing job with it.
Okay, well, we put out the call to our listeners and we asked them if they had any questions that they wanted to ask you. So we're going to throw a couple fan questions at you real quick. Ken Lutz from Jersey wanted to say, what small or one-shot role have you done that's your favorite?
A one shot. There was an episode of Scooby-Doo where, oh God, what was the storyline? I think it might have been a camp or something, a haunted camp. Like,
yeah, of course.
It's always a haunted camp.
But the thing about that one that was so great is that I got to say the meddling kids line.
Oh,
sweet.
And I mean, yeah, I don't even remember what the character was. I just remember that I got to say, if it hadn't been for those meddling kids. And that was just, you know, a joy.
That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I'm kind of jealous of that because I grew up watching Scooby-Doo. Like, that's like ingrained in my childhood right there.
Well, it's funny because some of the, like, the small roles and that you've ended up having, some of them just kind of fly by. And I'm like, really? Like you're in Spider-Man 2 and you don't say anything. You're just there.
Yes. That.
What's the story behind that?
I had auditioned for an actual part, the part that Hal Sparks got of the guy in the elevator when Peter loses his powers.
Right.
Nice suit. You know, again, not a big part, but I auditioned for it, didn't get it. And then a few months later, got a call saying, we've got a part for Phil on Wednesday. Can he come in? It's 2 days, Wednesday to Friday. Okay, what's the part? We can't say. Well, what's this? Can you send us the scene? No. What will he be doing? We're not at liberty to tell you.
Wow.
So it was like, you know, and they were in the middle of shooting. And this thing came up and we're like, and they was like, well, do you want to go work on Spider-Man 2? I'm like, all right. Ask them this one question. Will I definitely be working with Sam Raimi? They called, got back, it's like, yes, you'll definitely be working with Sam Raimi. It's like, all right, fine, I'm in. And I had no idea what I was doing. And basically what he was doing was he knew he had this big subway car scene with tons and tons of extras. But he hired eight actors that he was going to intersperse throughout the extras so that he would have people to really give real reactions. Cause he, you know, the way he was putting it is like, this scene is the emotional heart of the movie. It really needs to work. I can't just have people just making faces as I pan by. I need to be able to cut to people for real acting reactions. Now we may have lines. We may not have lines. You know, we're going to be changing this on the fly as it goes. So, you know, and he's explaining all this to us the first day. So you guys are going to be my soldiers in here to help carry this scene through. We're like, all right, sure. And, you know, it was a, you know, some character actors, some people that Sam Raimi knew from his, you know, high school days, you know, all interspersed throughout there. And it was funny because he kept trying to move us down the train, you know. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, Phil, you stand up here in the front. It's like, oh, that's great. And maybe, Phil, you carry Peter back to the other end and when you lay him down so that we can see you there. And the script supervisor's like, no. He can't be in the front of the train and at the back of the train.
Because you're right up there at the window, right at the front.
Exactly. Then she said, it's like, no, you can't cut to him there and there. Yes, I did have some lines, but they were cut out. Yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, as a comic book fan, how do you pass it up, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. And it was amazing. The 2 days turned into 2 weeks, you know.
Wow. I was
talking to Tobey Maguire, you know, I met John Dykstra, you know, and like, and of course I made a complete ass of myself. Cause the scene on the subway car, they had a big subway car in the middle of this gigantic soundstage, but there were guys, you know, pushing a big wooden like log type thing to rock it back and forth. It was very, very old school. It was not, you know, it didn't look digital in any way. And that's, you know, and they were actually breaking windows and stuff. So, and they had a puppet Doc Ock arm. So like everything seemed like it was real world. And so, you know, I passed John Dykstra, Oscar-winning special effects guru. And I'm like, well, this is sort of a easy scene for you, huh? No real effects here. He's like, well, except I have to create all of New York. And I look up, and the soundstage was probably the size of a city block. But wow. I realized the entire thing was a green screen. And, you know, he had to create the city of New York moving at 120 miles an hour digitally.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Entire scene. I'm like, oh, right, yeah, there's that. I'm gonna go sit down now.
Good times. Daniel Clark from Baltimore wants to know, is the process between creating a character – there's a few questions that are like sketch comedy related, I guess going back to the Mad TV days. There's a difference between creating a character for a sketch. How is it differ than creating a character for a voice, like for a cartoon or a game?
Well, the big difference is when you create a character for sketch, you're usually the one writing it. So it's your concept. But after that, they kind of dovetail. You're usually looking for either some aspect of yourself or some reference, like, you know, because usually characters are based on someone you know or somehow you feel. And it's the same with voices. You know, it's either a celebrity voice, you know, sometimes it'll take, you know, a Humphrey Bogart impression and dial it up a little bit so that it sounds a little higher, but you still maintain the way he speaks or something, and this becomes a character. You know, you take something you know and add it with what the writer is trying to create, and, you know, mix and mash them. Or sometimes you just sort of do yourself. You know, it's like, wow, when I, you know, this character is really sad, when I feel really sad, I, you know, I go down here, and then you usually tend to exaggerate it a little bit, both for a sketch and a voiceover. Oh, God.
Steve Elo from...
Hello.
Oh, I always screw up his name. It's like a recurring segment on the show is how will Mike screw up Steve's last name on the show?
We remember how to say it by saying Elo. Elo.
Yeah, yeah.
Elo. We
sing his last name
Elo,
to the Rihanna song. Instead of Umbrella, Ella. Yeah. Anyway, his question, while we continue to make fun of him by accident, I owe him so much. I'm sorry, Steve. Can you describe what led you to move away from sketch comedy and towards voice acting?
Actually, I didn't. I was doing both at the same time. We did voices on Mad TV. Because Corky Quakenbush did a bunch of claymation pieces, and we did the voices for all of the animated pieces on Mad, and, you know, so I started doing voiceover again there. I'd done it when I was in high school as well.
On the Mr. T show.
Yeah.
I did research.
Yeah, oh, good. I mean, the thing is, as an actor, you never really move away from any. Well, that's not true. I did move away from sketch consciously, just because looking at the people who made successful careers out of sketch comedy, I didn't feel like the way I did it was the way you needed to do it. I see the Adam Sandlers and people like that, like where you're basically doing a character, variations on a character, you know. And so that way they can say, oh, okay, let's write a movie around that character, or let's put that character in this movie, you know. And I liked doing different characters every time. I didn't, you know, the UPS guy, I think, was really the only character that I did over and over again. So I realized, oh, okay, this is, no one's going to buy, you know, I'm not branding myself here in the way I need to. And I don't like to do that. I want to, you know, be an actor so I can do different things. So I'm like, okay. And also I wasn't having a fun time at Mad TV. So, I decided to leave that show. I wasn't leaving Sketch in general. It was just that show in particular.
You know what? I'm asking all the questions. Why don't you ask the last two?
Okay. Steve had a follow-up question here for you. He says, you've worked a
lot
with...
One question and a follow-up. Yes.
you've worked a lot with voice director Andrea Romano. She's done as much voice directing as you've done voice acting. How would you describe the dynamic of working with her?
I think Andrea Romano is definitely one of the best, possibly the, well, she's the top five voice directors in the world. And because she has all the skills, she can cast, she can get a performance out of you, she knows what's funny, and she can also make everything easy for the producers, the actors, and the technical people. She understands all of it in a way that very, very few people do. Yeah, working with her is always a joy. I'm sad that I don't get to do it more often.
Has it been a while since the last time you worked with her?
Yeah, the last thing I worked with her on was Red Hood.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Which was fun.
Did a Jon Stewart Hot Girl animated movie, there you go.
You hope, unless they try to replace me with somebody else.
When have they ever recast a character, ever?
You're being facetious, right?
All right, and...
we're going to do Jon Stewart Hot Girl, but they're teens now, so we really want to skew younger.
I mean, you're Static, for crap's sake. You can go younger. You can go as young as you want.
I know that, and you know that, but neither one of us runs a studio, do we?
Not yet.
It's all in the works. All in the works.
We've got one last question from Steve Saylor from Toronto, who's part of the Twig crew here.
Snowball.
He wants to know, what was your favorite story from a recording session with a full cast?
My favorite story that doesn't get anybody in any trouble.
Spicy.
That makes... Now I want to hear those stories. Then.
What is my favorite story? You know, it's funny. The only one that comes to mind is actually the most painful story from a group record. There was one time we were doing an episode of Justice League, and one of the people who was doing a guest voice on it had a line where it was, yes, yes, I know, and then something, something else. And couldn't get the yes, yes. And it turned into, I think, 50-something takes.
Wow.
They got the line in the first couple, except for yes, yes. And, I mean, when I talk about how good a director Andrea Romano is, this was all of her talents on display. I've never seen anybody work harder to get another person to say two words. And they, you know, she went through everything. She tried method. She tried backstory. She tried, I'm going to say it. We're going to start recording. And then you just say it right back. And it was just gut-wrenching, especially because all of us have been guests on a show. When you're a guest on a show, there's a certain amount of pressure, you know, especially a show like that that's so good. And, you know, I mean, because this was several seasons in. And, you know, and you feel bad for the guy because it's like, I mean, I would have felt bad if it was me. And it was, and I was secure in my job, you know, on that show. Like, they're not going to replace me. But that's the thing. You go, you're like, yes, yes. Sorry. Yes, yes. All right, let me just do three in a row. Yes, yes, yes. And then after about six times, it just becomes noise. You know? You're like, I no longer recognize these as English words. And I don't know. I can only imagine how much he was sweating. But I was sweating for him. You know, like you start feeling like, oh God, that poor guy. And then it went so long, you got to, Jesus Christ, for us, you know. And eventually, I think they, I don't think they ever got it. I think somebody had to come in and voice it for him.
Like, oh, they got somebody to come in
and to say, yes.
I think they said, all right, okay, we got it. And then, like, afterwards, Bruce Timm went into the booth and said, yes. All right.
Sorry, Mike, you said you wanted to pop in real quick. And...
Yeah, I know a lot of people don't like this line, but I absolutely found it hilarious. Would you do the kiss my axe line from Justice League?
Oh, I don't even remember that one. Is that from the?
It's in Starcrossed when you're fighting Grohl.
The Victor guy. Yeah.
Actually,
okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. You know, they can't all be winners.
Kiss my axe.
That's so funny.
What was so great about that line was in the animation, Jon Stewart actually made an axe after he said the line and attacked the guy. It's so awesome.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Blanchard.
I think that was Dwayne getting a gag in there. It's funny though, sometimes the lines that people latch on to, like for Futurama, there was the my man witch.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Do you enjoy man witches?
When we recorded it, nobody even really like paid that much attention to it. Like, oh yeah, it's funny. It's not like, you know, great lion of Zion or anything, but yeah. And then I'm coming up to me at conventions, can you say my man witch? I'm like, why would I say that? Like, I didn't even remember. I was like, oh right. And now it's become like a thing.
When we were actually talking on last week's show that we were having you on the show, I yelled out my man witch.
So. Like, it's one of those things, like, because I might have told a few people that I was very excited, and you know, they were like, "Oh my god, can you ask if he eats man witches?" Like, it was like one of the first things, and it was kind of. And then one person wanted to ask about being shot in the face on Pulp Fiction, but most of it was manwiches.
That's bizarre. Do they even still make them? Like, are they still marketed? I mean, obviously you can make a manwich. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't think they even carry those. Like, ever carried that? It's one of those products that like we'd have to go to the States to get.
You should definitely get some money in advertising, though.
Yeah. Exactly. That's right. It's product placement. We're getting 5 cents per each episode. That's so funny. Oh my gosh. All right. I should get going because you guys, because you guys are 3 hours ahead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
We just wanted to know if there was anything you had coming up that you wanted to talk about real quick, and then we can let you go if you'd like.
What's going on? We're doing a new show called Kaijudo. It's on the Hub Network, and it's a kid show based on like a Pokemon type card game from like the 90s. Only Henry Gilroy, who worked on Clone Wars, and Andrew Robinson have like created a whole world around the idea of kids fighting through monsters. But now instead of cards, they have these gauntlets, and it's tied to this, you know, this whole other dimension where these monsters live. It's a really amazing, you know, story. They had a premiere of it, like a sneak preview, yesterday. And then I think the regular series starts up in June. Who is it? Me, Carl Walgren, Scott Wolf play the main three kids. There's a lot of good people on it. What else is going on? I'm doing a web series called Inside the Legend that should be on at the end of May or early June. It's me and Vanessa Raglan from My Culture Podcast. That should be a lot of fun.
You're also the announcer on Space Guys in Space.
Right. That's where it came about. It's the... I worked on Space Guys with Jason, and the producer said, well, would you be interested in doing a show? And, you know, we wound up making Inside the Legend. So it's the same producers. And also they produced Bite Me. Have you seen that? The zombie gamer web series?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God, you should. It's really funny and like amazing production values. It's on the Machinima channel on YouTube.
Okay.
And actually, I think they've also just ported it to TV on HDNet. Is that, or FearNet. No, FearNet. That's what it was. You know, there are all these channels, and like half the time you don't even have them. It's like, I don't. I'm like clicking down. It's like, do I have that? But yeah, Bite Me is hilarious. It's a zombie show, and the idea is the three guys who are best equipped in a zombie attack are the guys who have spent the most time playing zombie video games.
Makes sense.
It does, really, when you think about it.
Well, think of all the valuable skills you would learn from that. You know?
Exactly. And the strength of your thumbs.
Yeah.
So, yes, I did a guest part on Bite Me and a guest part on Space Guys in Space. And that led to our silly little thing or Inside the Legend. We play a bunch of – it's an interview show with characters from mythology, fiction, literature, and history. So it's like some real people, some imaginary people, some dead people, so, you know. And it's really goofy. It's really funny.
Cool.
Well, we'll have to definitely check that out. And yes. Thank you very much for joining us this
thank
morning.
Thank you so much.
It was
sure.
We had a great time. I hope you did too.
Oh, yes. Yes. No, I love you. I love your show. And yeah, so if you guys
you should see Laura right now. Just
I'm doing the Jonah Hill like, "Oh my goodness." Face.
When I was talking to Mike the other day, Mike asked me because I had told him that I sent you the two part two and part four of their Metal Gear episodes, and he asked me, well, what episode did he listen to? I was like, I don't know, I just sent him those two.
Oh, that's funny. No,
where I don't pay attention.
I listened to the first one. I listened to the new 52. Basically, I went scrolling down like, okay, which ones are they talking about the things that I like? Oh, okay, how about that?
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Yes,
for
thank you
for,
so, sure. so much.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys are – I'm at Phil Lamar on Twitter.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. And because I don't know when the actual dates for Kaijudo and Inside the Legend are, but I'll be posting there or on the Facebook fan page.
Okay. You know, yeah.
And hopefully my website will still be up after Mobile Me ends.
Well, we do have we have your Twitter, so yeah, anytime you post that, because we both follow you, yeah. Anytime you want to post about that, then we'll just retweet you, let everybody know.
And that's where I'll be. I'm always on there. Okay, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So once again, thank you, Phil, for joining us. But no, thank you, Mike, for setting that up, because that was awesome.
When he was doing Vamp, I could barely hear it. I know Vamp has that low quality to his voice, but I could, when he did the voice, I was like,
oh, I could hear it fine.
See, that's the thing. Like, I'd heard in a previous interview he'd done, because like I said, I did some research, that he was talking about Vamp, and he said Vamp is one of those characters that, like, you need a microphone for, because they'll boost it for you. Like, the way he does Vamp, it's not like he's, like, yelling into the microphone! He's
right
very quietly, so like they use the levels and such to boost him up, so I wasn't surprised at all when he came in and sounded like that. It was awesome. And when I go back and edit this, I'll boost him up.
Sweet.
Hey, good bra.
That's right. We wait till after he leaves for the dirty stuff. He said he wanted to hear that. We'll have to have him back.
Well, he'll maybe listen to the show and hear me talking about it.
Well, he said he wants to. He says he'd like to chat again and chat about all the dirty stuff. So that'd be awesome if he comes back. I will definitely talk to Phil again as long as Phil wants to talk to us, we will make time for him. So, like I said, once again, thank you, Mike. Now I believe that you're going to edit a version of the show as well. So there's going to be two versions of this show. You can listen to our version over at This Week in Geek, and you can also listen to Mike's version of the show over at the Geekcast Radio Network. So wherever you're listening to this right now, if you go to the other site, you can hear an almost identical but different version of the show. So it's like two shows in one.
Exactly.
So for the Untitled Mike and Laura Project, and for Geekcast Radio Network, I have been Mike, the Fist of Justice Layman.
Laura, over the moon right now, Thomas.
And TFG and Mike.
We'll talk to you guys next time.
Oh my goodness!
Stop fucking cracking your knuckles! You're fucking gross! Jeez, Hermes, you seem awfully calm about this.
Don't worry, I have a plan.
I'm going to jump!
No! Oh.
Do a flip!
Well, kids, that's all you get! That's it! Read a book!
Tell me about the cat noise.
The cat noise?
Yeah.
The one that Kratos makes?
Yeah.
The...
I don't think that's what it sounds like.
But I... Here he goes! Just ran by. Like a teeny ninja. Shit. Oh, I'm drunk, babe. The Untitled Mike and Laura Project is presented in association with ThisWeekInGeek.net. Check out ThisWeekInGeek.net for more geek content, and you can subscribe to all of our content through iTunes or any other podcatcher. If you want to tell us your thoughts on the Untitled Mike and Laura Project, you can give us a call at our voicemail line at 817-717-7202 or send an email to feedback@thisweekingeek.net, which I highly recommend you do as we love the feedback here at this show. And then, of course, you can contact us on the Twitters at reply Mike Laidman, at reply Laura underscore Raptor, and, of course, at reply This Week in Geek. Follow us while you're at it. We'll be best friends or something.
Did that sound a lot better in your head?
Yes, it did.
Until next week.
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.